Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by the Spotify Green Room, formerly known as the Locker Room app. Guys, Spotify Green Room is a live audio-only sports talk platform, free to download and use. Talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. Share your own experiences on the app. Start or join ongoing conversations. Watch games together. React to the biggest news, rumors, and games. And of course, I host a weekly show every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on the Spotify Green Room. The Bears Talk Underground presents Club 34/7. Be sure and join me. Come through and talk with me live. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS or Android app store. Create a profile, link to your Twitter, and join into the group. Follow me to be notified when my room goes live. And, of course, every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 o'clock Eastern, is when Club 34/7 hits the air. So be sure to join in on the fun, guys. You don't want to miss it. And be sure to follow me on the app so that you'll know anytime that I go live, because we'll be doing watch parties during the preseason. We'll be doing knee-jerk reactions during halftime, during the season, and things like that. Lots to do. This app opens up so many possibilities for interaction between me and you, my loyal audience. So be sure and download the Spotify Green Room app wherever you get your apps. What's up, guys? Time to close the book on the NFC West, and our friend from The Athletic in Seattle, Michael Sean Dugar, will be with us here in just a few moments. Can't tell you how much I enjoy this. I know that I mention it all the time. It's kind of kind of beating the point into the ground, and I apologize, but favorite time of the year as a podcaster, as we move on through this desolate wasteland of the off season, between the draft and the start of the training camp and preseason and everything. And was very happy to have my first writer from The Athletic on the show, and my Mike Dugar was the one that honored me with his knowledge of the Seattle Seahawks. And he makes a really great argument towards the end of our conversation for Justin Fields playing right away, because he was kind of like, he kind of lumped in Trey Lance with Justin Fields as like, these are guys, you know, they're going to be the future. Jimmy Garoppolo's not going to be your guy in the future. Andy Dalton's not going to be your guy in the future. Put them out there. They can learn and play at the same time, and things like that. And it's gone a long way with our guests kind of chipping at my thought of, let's be patient. Let's put Justin Fields out there. We don't want to put him out there too soon, throw much too at him, too much at him too soon, and, you know, kind of ruin him and blah, 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 blah. Mostly because, not so much because of the great argument that he makes, and he does make a great argument. It's the enthusiasm of literally everyone that we've spoken to so far, and the other interviews that I have in the can already. Everybody's excited to see Justin Fields and when he's going to be out there and playing, especially the Cincinnati and Cleveland, with him being an Ohio State guy and things like that. All looking forward to seeing when he's going to be out there and things like that. And it's just kind of chipped away at me being the cooler head and, you know, let's be patient. Let's do this the right way, because once he has the job, it's going to be his forever and all that kind of stuff. Put him out there, put him out there when he's ready. Don't want to rush him. We can trust Andy Dalton. We can win with Andy Dalton and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's just, it's all kind of melted away. Their excitement and, you know, their arguments on putting him out there have kind of, worn me down. And now I'm on the whole, if Justin Fields doesn't start week one, why are we even doing kind of thing? So Anyway, let's go ahead and get to the interview with Mike, and you know, so we can get to his reasoning for why Justin Fields should be out there ASAP and everything else. So it's this is the finale of the NFC West opponent preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out loud. And to wrap up our journey through the NFC West, we finished with last year's first place finisher. That would be the Seattle Seahawks. And here to help us preview the 2021 Seattle Seahawks from The Athletic in Seattle, Mike Dugar. Mike, thanks so much for being on the show, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So, Mike, let's talk about this team, because it's been quite a roller coaster over the last, you know, year and a half or so. Or actually, just over the last year. The 2020 starts off, they're 5-0. They go into the bye with an undefeated record. Then they lose, you know, like three out of the next five games, and then finish with four straight wins before losing a home game in the wild card round. I mean, it was the beginning of the season. There was no team better than the Seahawks. Russell Wilson is the surefire MVP because he threw like 50 touchdown passes in the first five games. They're just decimating opposing defenses. And then you go through that bump in the middle of the season, and then the schedule lightens up at the end before the collapse in the playoff game. I mean, what was 2020 like up close and personal?
Very, very confusing.
Yeah.
I mean, the mixture of the no fans, I mean, 2020 as a season, beyond what happened on the football field, I mean, you got, everything going on with race and police violence.
Right.
And then you have a pandemic, and then it's like, okay, here's football. Okay. But here's football with no fans.
Yeah.
And no real in-person interaction. It has all these protocols. And then on top of that, with an election year, like it was just a lot to process and cover. And again, people losing the jobs, and you got all the vitriol over like different, again, Democratic and Republican parties. Like it was a lot. And then you throw on a season actually on the field that was like confusing, because it's like, who's really pulling the strings on the Seahawks offense?
Yeah.
You know, and then who's pulling the strings on the Seahawks defense? Because within that recap that you just had, I would add that the defense was trash.
Like, right, yeah.
You know, a defense with a led by Pete Carroll sucked. And an offense led by Pete Carroll threw the ball a lot. And it just didn't make any sense for about 8-9 weeks. It really did not. And then they started to run the ball a little more, a smidge more in the second half of the season. And the defense got better in the second half of the season. And it was like, oh, okay. Life is starting, you know, to make sense a little bit. So that was kind of like in totality, kind of how I look at the season in big picture. It was a lot going on, and it was very confusing for most of the season, albeit entertaining, but still just a little puzzling, because you didn't know who was really like, what identity does this team want to have? And it makes sense that they then fired the OC because he did not agree with the identity. So like when Schottenheimer got fired at the end, it kind of made sense to me. It was like, oh. And then they cited in the press release philosophical differences. I was like, yes, that makes sense. You could tell that this was not a Pete Carroll team.
Yeah.
It was not. It was a Brian Schottenheimer and Russell Wilson team. And that worked for a little bit, but you could tell the guy highest up the food chain wasn't having it, which is why Shotty got the boot.
Right. And I was going to get to the defense, because it was like Russell Wilson had to throw four or five touchdowns a game for those first 5 weeks, because the defense gave up 25, 30, 31, 23, and 26, and they won all five of those games somehow, because Russell Wilson was lights out for the first 5 weeks of the year. I mean, and then they come back from the bye, they score 34, but Arizona scores 37, so the defense didn't really learn anything over that bye week. The, you know, 37-27 over the 49ers, who had overall last season had a lot of trouble scoring points because they had no quarterback, or they had an every new quarterback every week because everyone was going down. They were losing running backs to injuries and things like that, but they still managed to score 27 on that defense. But thank God Russell Wilson and the offense managed to score 37 in that one. I mean, it's just going through the first, 10 games of the season, the lowest defensive output was 23 when they beat the when they lost to the Rams, like week 10, and in a losing effort, they gave up their lowest point total of the season thus far.
Yeah, well, the defense, I mean, they couldn't rush the passer, right? When you can't rush the passer, you're gonna suck. I just don't really think there's a way around that. I mean, you add some injuries to Jamal Adams and injury to Shaquille Griffin in that Week 7 loss to Arizona. Quentin Dunbar getting hurt and Week 2. That didn't help, but I really think it was just like they. So, for example, this will probably say it best. In that Week 7 loss to Arizona, Kyler had 50 dropbacks, and I think Seattle had like zero quarterback hits.
Oh, wow.
Which is probably the worst pass rush performance I think I've ever seen. Like, legitimately, not even hyperbole. Like, that's a lot of dropbacks, a lot of opportunities to hit a guy, and you don't hit him at all. I mean, I think, like, he got hit on his scrambles, but, I mean, a QB hit is on a pass. So I don't think there was any quarterback hits in that game. And that was, and then they traded for Carlos Dunlap right after that. Like, it was like, all right, this is enough is enough. This is atrocious. So I think that really lets you know how bad things were. 7 weeks into the season.
So was it just that the schedule lightened up in those last five or six games because their defensive output got a lot better in this last six games, the 23-17 over Philly. They lost to the Giants, but it was 17-12, so another low-scoring effort. Only 3 points to the Jets, no big shock there. But they beat Washington 20-15. They beat the Rams 20-9. And then, you know, the 49ers managed to score 23 on them at the end of the season. Was there a defensive philosophy? Was it a change? Did Carlos Dunlap really help that much? What went different in the last six games or so where the defense was actually showing up a bit?
The quarterbacks got a little suckier. That definitely helped. I think in that back stretch, they played probably like five QBs who aren't even starters anymore.
Sure.
Like Colt McCoy. I guess Wentz is still a starter, but like they're not starters for their same team anymore.
So right.
Goff, whoever was starting for the Niners, maybe Mullins, Colt McCoy, Carson Wentz, and then Dwayne Haskins. They had that in the stretch, and that's a bunch of dudes who ain't even on. They suck so bad they're not even on the team.
Right.
Mullins might be, but you get the point.
Yeah.
So that helped. That was definitely part of why they turned things around defensively. They got Jamal Adams back. He missed a lot of that stretch.
Okay.
He missed like four or five games. So getting, you know, your Pro Bowl safety, who was one of the best pass rushers in the league last year, legitimately. I think he was like top 12 in sacks. And for only playing like 12 games. So that helped. And then, yeah, getting Carlos Dunlap up. Like, just like how if you don't have a pass rush, you'll stink. If you do have a pass rush, you have a really good chance to be good, you know. So I think that the combination of all three of those things made them legitimately like a top two or three defense in the back half of the season.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir, man. You're talking to a guy who is who's a Chicago Bear fan. In 2018, we got a guy called Khalil Mack, and all of a sudden, we went from, you know, a middle of the road defense that was improving to all of a sudden having a top five defense that was suffocating quarterbacks literally overnight. So, yeah, I understand the value of a pass rush, and it's like our secondary, which was pretty good on its own, all of a sudden was one of the most blanketed secondaries in the league, at least for that one season in 2018. They were absolutely everywhere with interceptions. Eddie Jackson was all world and things like that. And in these last two seasons, 2019 and 2020, we struggle with our pass rush. Eddie Jackson can't tackle anybody. He's nowhere near interceptions and things like that. So everybody always wonders, you know, that chicken or the egg theory with the pass rush in the secondary, which one helps both. And they really just help each other because, you know, the secondary will help the pass rush. The pass rush will help the secondary. And there's no, you can make the argument either way about which one drives the engine on improving the other.
Yeah, I lean towards, I think, you know, pressure definitely bursts pipes. Like, that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the ball gets out so fast today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's gotten out fast before. I shouldn't say today, but you just look at how fast the ball gets out. And then if you can make bad things happen when the ball does get out, something that happens more often.
Yeah.
Then I think you're in a really good spot. Now, as we saw with the Chiefs, in the Super Bowl, like if your quarterback is under duress, it doesn't matter if he's Superman, right? If the other team's going to struggle. But at the same time, Mahomes was making throws. Like, he hit two dudes in the hands in the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, in the Super Bowl. Like, they just
sure did.
Dropped the ball, literally. So I think they do work hand in hand. If I was going to build a defense first, I'd probably start with elite DBs. Like, if I had a draft and I was like, I can't have any defensive players, probably my first two picks would probably be the two best corners,
mm-hmm.
Outside corners, and then I'd fill in. Then I'd go to the D line. part of it is, like I said, if you can make bad things happen when the ball does come out, it's great. And then corners don't come off the field. You know, in a perfect world, Jalen Ramsey for the Rams plays 100% of the snaps. Aaron Donald does not.
Right.
It's a math game at that point. If I get more snaps from you, I can increase the likelihood that you make bad things happen for the offense.
Sure.
So it's not to say pass rush is irrelevant. Of course it is. Again, right. Aaron Donald. Great. But I do think if I had to, I don't know if the pass rush is the chicken or the egg in this regard. But
right.
Like I said, if I was building, I'd probably start with the best cover guy in the league, and then take the second best cover guy too, because they're putting three receivers on the field at a time. So I need to be able to lock them all up.
Yeah, because you need like three or four good corners to have success in the NFL these days. You know, they're throwing the ball at least 70% of the time in most cases. So yeah, secondary is definitely important, and they're playing a lot more nickel packages these days. And you know, you've got your hybrid players coming along, the linebacker slash safety that you know, we haven't quite given a name to. We're gonna have to name that position one of these days, because you know, he's not a linebacker or a safety, but he's playing both positions. We're gonna have to find a name for that position some point. But you know, I tend to agree that the secondary helps the, or that I would probably go secondary over pass rush, just because in most cases, like you mentioned, the ball's coming out so fast, so a lot of pass rushers don't have the time they need to get to the quarterback, no matter how good they are. So the secondary can be there to disrupt the ball if it does manage to come out.
Yeah. I mean, I really want to make it clear, pass rush really, really matters. Like,
yes.
You're splitting hairs here when you choose between.
That's why I said it's a tough argument to have, because you could definitely, you can definitely swing it both ways, and you can actually kind of, you know, in the same argument, argue for both sides and not really even realize it.
Yeah. I mean, I would never really ignore one side or the other.
Right.
To be honest, the other thing about corners is that, like, yeah, the really great ones take the ball away too. So like, it's not just like pass deflections or whatever, but even then, like, deflections can lead to, you know, other, you know, turnovers and stuff, like interceptions and stuff. But I mean, you look at Seattle's biggest play in franchise history is a pass deflection first by Sherman that ends up getting intercepted against the Niners in the NFC Championship.
Right.
But the other thing is, because the other team's best player is probably going to be a receiver. Right? And if you can just take him out the game, oh, man, that changes everything. I mean, look at the Seahawks and Rams are such a good example from the last two years. The last, like, 2 years. DK Metcalf is a monster.
Yeah.
And, you know, look how he's built. Look how big he is. Look how strong he is. Look how fast he is. Look how high he can jump. Man, Jalen Ramsey can do all that, too. Right? And so what happens? The Seahawks offense looks like crap against the Rams every year. Since the Rams traded for Jalen Ramsey, Russell Wilson has looked just pedestrian against those guys. Right? He's lit them up when they've had Aaron Donald. But the difference isn't Aaron Donald. The difference is having someone to take away DK.
Yeah.
Like, you just look at – like, they're a really good case study, and, like, one hand washes the other for sure. But look at how that defense in particular was able to stifle Seattle specifically. And, like, it's the addition – of Jalen just changed everything for them.
Speaking of which, you know, stifling the Russell Wilson and the Seahawks offense, that's what happened in that wild card game. I wouldn't call it the world's biggest upset, but I think it was a surprise that the Rams came away with the road win in Seattle like that, when the season series, I mean, just 2 weeks before, the Seahawks dominated 20-9 and won at home, and here they are. They come right back to the scene of the crime, and it's a 30-20 win for the Rams, and they move on to the next round. And the rumblings of Russell Wilson and his unhappiness and everything kind of began with that game.
I would call it a surprise for sure. I forget.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised
what the line was.
Yeah,
I mean, it was the fact that they had just beaten them, the fact that they were starting John Wofford.
Right.
Like, they were starting Wofford in a playoff game at home in Seattle. Seattle had never lost a home playoff game under Pete Carroll in like 10 years or something.
Wow,
like
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because every time they won, they would end up losing on the road. So that year they were 7-9, they lost to the Bears. That was in Chicago.
Right.
And then they lost Super Bowl. They lost at Atlanta in Russ's rookie year, and their other losses are like at Atlanta again. The year they go to the Super Bowl, at the Panthers, the year they go to the Super Bowl, and then at Dallas in 2018, and then at Green Bay in 2019. So they had always lost on the road. So you're talking about a team that had never lost a playoff game at home under their current regime, playing against, you know, a defense that was on fire entering the playoffs, going against a backup quarterback. That was very much a shock that they looked the way they did. And I think they had beef, Russ and like the front office and stuff. They've had like a little friction behind the scenes the whole time, because, you know, Russ, every year they don't make the playoffs or make the Super Bowl, Russ gets pissed.
Yeah.
And like, Russ expects to be in the Super Bowl every year. And while as crazy as that sounds, you got to look at it from his view. His rookie year, they go to the divisional round. His second year, they go to the Super Bowl and they win. The third year, they go to the Super Bowl and they win. His fourth year, they make it to the divisional round again. Fifth year, they make it to the divisional round again. If I'm doing the math right.
Yeah.
So, like, he expects deep playoff. That's just kind of how he gets down, right? And then he looks at somebody like Tom Brady, who is seemingly in the Super Bowl every year. So he's just like, why not? If he can do it, why can't I do it? That's just kind of his mindset. So he wants all of the pressure on him. He would like more support and more input and just more of a burden, I guess, in the offense. And every year he doesn't get that and they don't advance, he gets pissed.
Yeah.
So I think he had it. It's been building up now for quite a while, but I think the loss to the Rams really just was like, what are we doing here, guys? Like,
yeah.
Why are we not winning? Like, I threw 40 touchdowns this year. Like, we should, there's no way in hell we should look like this. And he was pretty pissed.
Well, I mean, it caused quite a stir here in the Midwest when that list of teams came out, and looking at the reasoning, you know, like, here's why New Orleans can't do it. They don't have the salary cap space. They can't do this. The Raiders already have Derek Carr and blah, blah, blah. The Cowboys and just signed Dak Prescott, or at least they're going to. So that leaves the Bears. We don't have a quarterback or anything like that, and that leaves them, you know, with the best position there. And the Bears made an offer. I never really heard what that offer was, but I heard it was one that probably would have made me sick to my stomach as far as what they were willing to give the Seahawks to bring Russ into town. But, you know, it doesn't happen. The chips fall the way that they do when we end up with Justin Fields, which was best case scenario in my opinion. But, you know, if there was anybody in all the teams or quarterbacks, excuse me, that the Bears were attached to, and that was the most embarrassing part of the offseason, was anyone who was even semi-available was attached to the Bears at one point. And it was like a quarterback of the week thing. Carson Wentz, Matt Stafford, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, you name it. The Bears were connected to him in one way or another, or there was a scenario where the Bears could make it happen. Here's what they have to give up to get him and all that kind of stuff. Of all the people that we were quote-unquote attached to, Wilson was the guy that I wanted. If we had to mortgage the future to get somebody, Russ was the guy. And because I felt like out of all those guys that we were talking about there, he was the one that could elevate the people around him. Like, that's what I see him doing in Seattle, and he could bridge the gap between mortgage, giving up three first rounders and whatever second rounders and things like that. He could help us bridge the gap between the talent we wouldn't have before we could finally go out and get him some help, as opposed to the other quarterbacks I didn't think could do it as well as he could.
Yeah, there was no way Russ was getting traded to any of those teams.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't. I think, because here's the thing. Pete Carroll has no interest in rebuilding anything. Like, he really doesn't. He's trying to win right now and keep winning. And he knows that you've got to have a quarterback to do that. I mean, you mentioned that it was like QB of the week for the Bears this offseason. I honestly think that's how it should go. I mean, even after the 2011 season in Seattle, they were real thirsty for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And they ended up paying Matt Flynn, but they ran on Peyton Manning. The Seahawks, like, flew a jet to wherever Peyton Manning was hosting his offseason visits from teams. They flew there like unannounced and like hit him up like, yo, hey, we here. He's like, you're where? Like, we're in Denver or Arizona or wherever the hell he was. He was like, nah, I'm good. So like they got left on red pretty much, like flying a private jet to a dude unannounced. So I mean, if they were that thirsty, I mean, I don't fault the Bears for being in on everything. I mean, the Panthers were too. Panthers and Broncos were in on everything this offseason. I can't
blame. Right.
If you have a quarterback, you're not going to win the Super Bowl. I mean, that's probably not. Like, the Philly got really lucky in like 2017, having Foles basically be their like closer or like middle reliever or whatever.
Yeah.
That season, but for the most part, you're probably not going to win a Super Bowl or even sniff one if you don't have a quarterback. So you definitely should like turn over every stone trying to find one.
Yeah.
If you can. But there was no way in hell Seattle was going to make any trade for like picks and players that weren't quarterbacks. That's just kind of not how it worked.
Yeah, that was the one thing that we didn't have to bargain with.
Yeah, the only thing that made sense for Seattle was like, if you just swap Russ and Dak, I guess, you could do that. That actually would have made some sense for Dallas because Russ would have been cheaper than Dak because Russ would have already been given his signing bonus. So Dallas would have been getting him for like 3 more years or something at like 20 mil and some change plus for those years, which is actually great for them. And they're upgrading at quarterback too. Seattle would get a younger franchise QB. That would have worked. This is like pre-Deshaun Watson allegation era.
Right.
So a swap there probably would have worked. But Seattle needs a quarterback. He was never going to go to Chicago. He was never going to go to New Orleans. We did an exercise at the Athletic where I played GM and had my peers submit trade proposals, and they were absolutely disgusting. It was like, our New Orleans guy offered me like Taysom Hill and a bunch of picks. I was like, God, no, get out of here. Like, I'll get fired if I trade Russell Wilson and only get back Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, and none of those teams had high draft picks either.
Yeah.
You know, that's why in the initial reporting that me, Jason Jenks, and Mike Sando did, the list that we heard included teams like the Jets and Dolphins. And those would have made more sense for Seattle because it's like, all right, we're not getting a quarterback, but if you give us the number 3 pick, that's what Miami had at the time.
Right.
You give us the number 3 pick, all right, we can work with that, right? We'll take whatever's left after Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence. That's doable. And if you trade the Jets, like, well, shoot, we'll take any non-Trevor quarterback in the draft. That's doable. These other teams are not. What, Chicago have, like, the 18th pick or 20th pick 20, or something? Yeah. Raiders are in the teams, I think.
The Saints
don't know where the hell the Saints were.
Or like mid-20s, I think.
Yeah, and then the other team, the Cowboys, actually had a decent pick and could have swapped Dak, but they weren't going to do that.
Right.
So yeah, he was never really leaving unless it was to a team like Dallas or Houston who could return a quarter, do a QB swap. They're not interested in, you know, Andy Dalton and picks or whoever the hell else in picks. That's just kind of not how Pete Carroll and John were thinking.
Yeah, and the fly in the punch bowl for the Dallas-Seattle thing was that Dak was a free agent. So he technically Dallas didn't you know, for lack of a better term, own him to trade him at that point. It would have to be a sign and trade type thing.
Sign and trade, yeah, sign and trade thing.
So, but you know, like I said, it was quite the talk here for a while, and of course, you know, rumors unsubstantiated though they may have been, you know, about how close it was, and everyone started getting excited with the idea, including me, because it's like if there has to be a guy, that's the one that I would want out of all the people that we've been connected to. Russ is the guy for me. That, you know, I would love to see him play for Chicago. I would love to see him and his insane accuracy throwing deep balls to Darnell Mooney and just watching them light up the scoreboard best they could. And, you know, Russ was the guy. But I also never got really attached to the idea like it was going to happen. It's just like out of all of these scenarios, Russ is the one that I want over Deshaun Watson, over everybody. But I don't, like you said, there's no way it was going to happen. I never believed that it would, even when the rumors came out that Pace had made an offer.
I mean, you can make an offer all you want. That was the other thing. The Seahawks weren't like picking up the phone and be like, hey, who wants Russ? Like, people were texting them and calling them. Like, they had no interest in trading Russ. That's why when Russ got up there in the press conference like last week and was like, yeah, you know, there was some chatter that they might trade me. I was like, I think you started that.
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, like, or whoever, you know, I think Jason Lockenfora's tweet before the Super Bowl kicked that off. It's not like Seattle was out here like, hey, yeah, nah, we got this Russ guy. We don't really want him. No, he's not stupid.
Right.
So I think you want to talk about chicken and egg. It's like, Russ, were you responding to the trade rumor? Did your camp create them? That's a legit question there. So, yeah, I applaud the Bears for doing what they had to do. I'll reach out, call, offer the naming rights to the stadium, you know, statue, whatever it took to try to get him. But
yeah,
I'm fairly confident that John Schneider never took any of those offers seriously.
Right. So we move on to the free agency period, and was a lot of comings and goings for the Seahawks this offseason. For, you know, you guys want Russ wanted some more help up front. He gets Gabe Jackson after the Raiders, for some reason, decided to overhaul their offensive line. So he becomes available. He joins the Seahawks. Alden Smith, in an effort to revive his career once again, is in Seattle. Is he still with you guys? He hasn't done anything to get himself in trouble again, has he?
Not that we know of. to my knowledge, he's not. He's not at OTAs or anything.
Okay.
Or many camp. He probably won't be.
Okay.
But it'll be like an excused absence. I mean, once you're wanted for a crime, Seattle usually lets you know right. stay away from work if you need to.
Right.
So I don't fault him there. But yeah, right. he's still on the team.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean it as a joke or anything. Legitimately, like, you know, the guys could sneeze in the wrong direction. All of a sudden, he's in trouble with the law again. But, you know, just wondering if he was still around. A signing that I really liked very much was Gerald Everett coming over from the Rams, the tight end, joining the team. And, you know, we got another interesting guy in Akella Witherspoon coming through, and another edge rusher in Kerry Hyder from the 49ers coming through as well. I mean, you know, what do you think of the free agents that they had coming in? Which, I mean, aside from Everett, who I think is a day one starter for you guys, who else is going to really be helping out this year?
I mean, on the pass rush?
Or just on the team in general? Like, who do you think will be maybe, like, the gem of the guys that they brought in so far?
Good question. I think Gerald has a chance to be impactful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the offseason, every team overestimates how much their running backs and tight ends will be used in the passing offense.
Right.
I mean, I just think that's just what we do. I mean, not we. I don't think I'm included in that. I've kind of learned my lesson there. Like, quarterbacks, like, if you got good receivers, that's who the quarterback throws to.
Right.
Right. Like, they throw to the tight end when there's no good other good options. Like, you look at the teams whose tight ends really light it up, with the exception of Travis Kelce, there's not a ton of other great options, you know, out there. You look at when Zach Ertz is killing it. It's like, yeah, it was supposed to be throwing it. Aguilar? No. You know, look at the Raiders. Like, okay, Darren Waller's killing it. Okay, why? Supposed to throw it to Hunter Renfro? You know, mm-hmm. so I think that Gerald has a chance to contribute. I don't think he'll, like, kill it. Not because he's not talented. I just think that there's, like, a cap on, you know, tight end contributions on any team that has good receivers. I mean, any fantasy football player knows that. Like, after tight end 1, 2, and 3, it's a drop-off. You know, it's always been that way. It's probably always going to be that way.
Right.
So I think if he gets a starting job and stays healthy, Akella Witherspoon is like a sleeper candidate to be really impactful. Again, same with corners. They don't come off the field. So, like, if he plays 17 games and stays healthy, he's got a really high ceiling. Got a lot of talent. Just hasn't been healthy. He's been out here playing with bad quad. Played with like a broken toe, I think, before. Like, he just hasn't been able to get right among some other injuries. But at his best, he's been really good. When he's on the field and healthy, he's performed at a very high level, gets his hands on the ball. He's very athletic. He's like 6'3", very good at the line of scrimmage, really strong cat. I think he's listed like 200 pounds, but plays pretty strong. So I think of all the guys, he's the one that I would probably guess, excluding any draft picks, that would have potential to like pop off the screen in 2021.
And then out of the guys you lost, Jerron Reed, Quentin Dunbar, Carlos Hyde, Philip Dorsett, Shaquille Griffin, is that the younger brother or the older one, the corner?
Shaquille's. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so the same age.
Oh, that's right. They're twins. My bad. Yeah, they are twins. The brother with no hand, he was a linebacker, wasn't he?
He was like an edge.
An edge? Kind of. Okay. All right. So that's the corner, Shaquille Griffin. He goes to Jacksonville. And like I said, Jonathan Bullard, he was one of our old, he used to be a third round pick for the Bears. He's off to Atlanta now. So out of those guys, you know, would it be Jerron Reed? I mean, was he very helpful with the pass rush last year? Is he going to be missed? Because out of pass rush guys, that's the one guy that's leaving as far as the defensive line goes.
Yeah, I think Jay Reed had like 6 sacks or something last year. He was really good in the second half of the season. I would say he is a big loss. Losing KJ Wright, too, who's still a free agent, is probably the biggest loss.
Right.
I think, because he was one of their best defensive players last year. I know he wasn't one of the three guys who made the Pro Bowl, but he was very, very impactful. He just couldn't make the Pro Bowl because he plays he was playing Sam linebacker. And so technically that's an outside linebacker, and then the voting for that, you're up against like Khalil Mack, right? Playing you know, outside and 3-4. So you just kind of don't have a chance. Just because it's weird because they don't play the same position at all. But yeah. You get my point. So I think not having KJ back is probably, if I had to rank them, I'd say not having KJ, that's one. Shaquille Griffin, two, just because they didn't really reload there at corner. They don't have any corners under contract beyond this year other than the rookie they just took, Trey Brown in the fourth round. So that's a problem. And then I would go with Jay Reed. They just have other bodies on the D-line. You know, they have Darrell Taylor, who they drafted last year to play, to be a rush, like, edge guy. They brought in Kerry Hyder, like you mentioned. They re-signed Carlos Dunlap. They still have Puna Ford, who just got an extension, defensive tackle. They brought back Benson Mayowa, who was one of their better pass rushers. They still have Jamal Adams rushing the passer at a high level. LJ Collier, their first-round pick in 2019, was a full-time starter last year. So they got bodies to rotate. And then not to mention if Alden Smith, like, doesn't go to jail, he should be very good, too. He had a really good year last year for Dallas.
He did.
Very limited pass rush reps because their defense stunk. So they got the horses on defense. So not to say Jay Reed's not talented. I actually think he'll play really well in Kansas City this year. Mm-hmm. Especially reunited with Frank Clark, his boy. The last time Jay Reed had double-digit sack season, it was in 2018, playing next to Frank Clark, who also had double-digit sack. So I think Jay Reed will be good. It's just they were able to reload at that position, whereas they really didn't fill the holes by losing KJ and Shaquille. So they're a little thinner at those spots.
Okay. That outside linebacker thing, you're preaching to the choir, man, because you're talking to a guy who had Lance Briggs on his team for 12 years, and he did not make as many Pro Bowls as he probably should have because he was listed as an outside linebacker. Or actually, he made Pro Bowls. He didn't make all pro teams because he was an outside linebacker. You know, he made plenty of Pro Bowls in his career, but being listed as an All-Pro as one of the best, because there's only one All-Pro team, and he was never really ever on it because he was an outside linebacker and he was going up against, you know, the pass rushers of the 3-4 that were lighting up, you know, the DeMarcus Wares of the league and things like that were the ones keeping him out of those All-Pro lists because he's a stand-up outside linebacker and not his hand on the ground. Outside linebacker. So I definitely was feeling you when you were like, yeah, it's not the same position, but they're somehow being voted against one another. So not exactly fair, and I know exactly what you're talking about there. So
this episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by the Spotify Green Room, formerly known as the Locker Room app, guys. Spotify Green Room is a live, audio-only sports talk platform, free to download and use. Talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. It's perfect for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and reacting to breaking news. Share your own experiences on the app. Start or join ongoing conversations. Watch games together. React to the biggest news, rumors, and games. And, of course, I host a weekly show every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on the Spotify Green Room. The Bears Talk Underground presents Club 34/7. Be sure and join me. Come through and talk with me live. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app free in the iOS or Android app store. Create a profile, link to your Twitter, and join into the group. Follow me to be notified when my room goes live. And, of course, every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 o'clock Eastern, is when Club 34/7 hits the air. So be sure to join in on the fun, guys. You don't want to miss it. And be sure to follow me on the app so that you'll know anytime that I go live, because we'll be doing watch parties during the preseason. We'll be doing knee-jerk reactions during halftime, during the season, and things like that. Lots to do. This app opens up so many possibilities for interaction between me and you, my loyal audience. So be sure and download the Spotify Green Room app wherever you get your apps. This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by Kansas City Steaks. Kansas City Steak Company wants to make this your best grilling season ever. Visit KansasCitySteaks.com and get 15% off your order and free shipping with the code SD at checkout. From classic steak cuts to USDA prime to hard-to-find specialty cuts and more, Kansas City Steaks has everything you need to fire up the grill. These are steakhouse-quality steaks, aged to perfection. They make it so easy. Each order is flash frozen and delivered directly. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Enjoy their butter tender filet mignon, hearty Kansas City steak strip steaks, and savory ribeyes. It's been a hard year, so enjoy being together again by bringing the steakhouse to your house with Kansas City Steaks. Go to KansasCitySteaks.com and get 15% off your order and free shipping with the code SD at checkout. That's KansasCitySteaks.com, code SD.
But you mentioned the draft picks. Trey Brown in the fourth quarter was one, fourth round, was one of three draft picks the Seattle Seahawks had, because to hell with draft picks, we'll just trade them to get other guys on the team. Like, you didn't have a first rounder because of the Jamal Adams trade. No third rounder, no fifth rounder, no seventh rounder. So all even picks, second, fourth, and sixth round, the top pick in the draft being for you guys, for the number 56 overall, Dwayne Eskridge, a wide receiver out of Western Michigan. How's he going to be looked to contribute his first year on the team?
Someone asked me, it was like, Mike, what's a good like rookie year for Dwayne Eskridge? And I was like thinking, okay, let me factor in, how much snaps he'll get. A number three receiver, usually don't get a ton. He can play the slot and play outside, so that increases his chances a little bit, but still a rookie. What I imagine will be a run first offense in 2021. So I looked and I was like, damn, if he just has a year like David Moore had last year, that actually would be fine. And David Moore's now in Carolina, but I think, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think David, he's like 35 catches. I want to say anywhere between like 400 to 500 yards. The average was going to say like 17 yards a catch, though. Yeah. It was pretty high. And like six touchdowns. And he was like third in passer rating when targeted among qualifying receivers. So, like, that's a really good year. Now, if he did that every year, like, that's like the second round pick. But if he just did that as a rookie, that would be a decent year, because you're playing with Tyler Lockett and DK. Just like I said about tight ends, we really overestimate what the third receiver is going to do, too. Like, if you get your top two guys healthy, you're probably, your third guy is not going to go crazy. I know Pittsburgh had three guys put up decent numbers last year. But I think that's an outlier, especially in a run-first offense like I expect Seattle to have. So I think if Dwayne, yeah, gets anywhere from like 30 to 40 catches, we catch a six touchdowns, that's great. I mean, I think that's like Keenan Allen's career average of like six a year. So if he gets in the end zone six times, that would be really great. If he has a yard per catch somewhere above 15, I think that would probably include making some really big catches too. So yeah, I think those are decent expectations. I think for a second round guy who's like 5'9", and he's got like 4.3 speed, but you know, there's an acclimation period. So I think that's probably the numbers I would throw at Dwayne for his rookie year.
Even from, conference, or is it it's not Conference USA, the conference that he's from. Is it Conference US? No, it's not.
No, it's like the MAC or something.
Yeah,
like
it's the MAC. That's what it is. It's the MAC.
Yeah,
Mid-Atlantic or something like that. Mid-Athletic.
I don't really think – I don't really buy into that when it comes to – receivers, DBs, quarterbacks. I really just think that, like, you can just get skill guys pretty much anywhere. Like tight ends, if you're nasty, you're nasty. I don't think we need to get all like elitist about Power Five teams. Like,
sure.
If you're nasty, go down to Senior Bowl, see if you're still nasty. Oh, you are? Okay, cool, we'll draft you. You know, we'll get you coached up. Especially by the time you get to an actual game, because, like, in a traditional year, you get OTAs, usually with your whole team. You get mini camp with your whole team. You get four preseason games, you know, against other dudes who are trying to hit you hard. And then you get your regular season game. So it's like, but the guys still take a while to adjust. but you it's not like you go straight from playing at Toledo to playing against the Bears, right? Like you do get some adjustment, and if you're nasty, like I said, you're nasty. I mean, look at there's been so many examples both ways. You got guys who played at Bama their whole life, or they played at the highest level, 5-star recruit, Bama national championship, get to the league, stink, and you get the dude to like barely got any offers, D3 transferred, ended up like 1 year like Wisconsin, and then get to the league and kill it, right? So I don't read too much into where you went to college, as long as you like were super nasty wherever you're at.
Yeah, if you have the talent, they'll find you no matter where you are. I mean, you know, that was as true back in the day as it is today. And, you know, you see it happen all the time. I mean, the Bears have actually done a really good job over the last several years with like their day three guys, like Ryan Pace or whatever, has an ungodly touch in the fifth round. Darnell Mooney, Jordan Howard, you know, we've had like three or four major hits, and he got Tariq Cohen, Eddie Jackson in the fourth round and things like that. So day three, and we've had a few undrafted free agents really, you know, come up. Bryce Callahan, Roy Robertson Harris, who's with Jacksonville now, things like that. He's you know, if you have the talent, they'll be able to find you. Roy Robertson Harris went to UTEP. Bryce Callahan went to Rice. You know, he'll find you even in those smaller non-Power 5 schools. If you have the talent, they'll give you a shot. It's up to you on what you do with it.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily about being found, because that's definitely not a problem. It's just performance.
Yeah.
You know? There's been plenty of busts from the SEC, and there's been plenty of studs from the Sun Belt.
Yes.
You know, it just kind of is what it is. You know, once you, because it's all about, I think it's more about what type of scheme you play and what position you play too. Like if you played center in a pro style offense, you know, where you had a lot of responsibility for checks and, you know, stuff. Same thing if you're a Mike linebacker in a defense and you're really responsible for a lot of things and processing at a very high level. Okay, that's important, right? Whereas if you were just a freak athlete and you were just running four routes, you know, you get to the NFL, they're running a bunch of like option routes and stuff like that, and your timing's off with your quarterback, you might suck. So there's so many other variables I think that we can use to measure whether a kid's going to be good that I would rank above what conference the dude played in.
Yeah, first one that came to mind when you mentioned, you know, went to Bama, 5-star recruit, top draft pick and didn't do a thing in the league. The first guy that came to mind was Trent Richardson, the running back. If he didn't win the Heisman, he came close to doing it or whatever. Drafted number 3 overall by Cleveland, had a decent rookie year, and then went off a cliff after that. Even after being traded to the Colts, which is a really good football team at the time, he did nothing for them. And then he finished off in Oakland before finally disappearing from the league. Is just like he was a here today, gone tomorrow player, but had the charmed, you know, upbringing from, you know, high school to college and high draft pick in the NFL. One of the last top 5 running backs chosen for a while in the 2012 draft. It wasn't until we got to like Zeke in like 2016, 2017 before somebody felt comfortable taking a running back that high again.
Yeah, and I'm not of the opinion that any position is irrelevant.
Yeah.
So I would never say like running backs don't matter, but I would fire the GM that takes a running back in the top 10. you're done right then and there. Like I'm walking downstairs to the war room and like, hey man, get out. I'll handle the rest of the draft. You're done. His positional value is just not there.
Right.
It's comparable to other positions. It's not that running backs don't matter at all. It's just when you compare them to other positions, the value is just not there. You can like I think the Panthers in 2019 are such a good. There's plenty of case studies that are good to do this, and like isolating one person doesn't tell the whole tale. But I do like using the 2019 Panthers. Look at what they had in McCaffrey. This was a dude 1,000 yards on the ground, 1,000 yards through the air, and I don't care about their wins and losses. Their offense sucked.
Yeah.
Like, independent of anything else, their offense was bad with a very, very, probably the best running back in the league that year. And their offense was still bad. He didn't transcend anything. Their offense still stunk.
He was their offense, yeah.
Right. And they still stunk. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you look at the other positions, when you have the best insert here, it's really hard for your offense to stink, right? It can still stink. You got the best left tackle and your offense stinks or whatever, but if you're the best quarterback or the best left tackle, hell, or the best right tackle, best center, or the best, like, you know, best receiver, offense is going to, it probably won't stink. Now, it doesn't guarantee you win games. It's a team sport.
Right.
But your offense probably won't stink. That's just kind of my thing on it. And it's just like the impact that you can have in terms of explosion is just so much better at the other positions. Like, if we're just talking offense, like, what's a good yards per carry? You know, the yards per carry leader in every given season is probably what, around like 5-something?
Probably.
5.3 probably win you this.
Yeah, high fours, low fives, yeah.
Yeah, probably win you the title, like a bum of a receiver's 10 yards a catch.
Sure.
Right, like a great running back out of the backfield, it's probably averaging like 8 yards a reception, maybe 9. Like, they're, even when they catch the ball, like, it's low value reception. Like, they're not, you're not moving the chains that much. It's just little dump offs and stuff like that. It was like a fourth round receiver can probably, you know, give you that at a fraction of the cost. It's just like, in terms of the cost of the player, the positional value, what they actually bring you on the field when they are elite. And that's before you factor in that they can't do anything with a bad O-line.
Right.
Like, Russ has had bad O-lines and still been transcendent. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had receivers with bad quarterbacks and bad O-lines be nasty and help their offense, like, thrive. Whereas, like, if your running back is trash, I don't care. Or, excuse me, if your O-line is trash, I don't care if you got modern-day Barry Sanders back there. You're just not going to get it done. You're not going to elevate your offense, considering the cost. Like, I think you look at a lot of these running back contracts, and their teams are going to start regretting these. Some of them already are. I mean, look, Le'Veon, terrible deal. Yeah. Todd Gurley, terrible deal. I'm glad all these brothers are getting paid, of course. I want everybody to get their money.
Right.
But yeah, again, I'd fire a lot of these GMs. Like, that Zeke deal is terrible.
Yeah.
That Kamara deal is terrible. Dalvin Cook deal is terrible. Not to say these aren't good players, but, like, you look at what they contribute to the offense relative to the price tag versus what they could get in the draft for a fraction of the cost. Yeah, it's just bad business.
Agreed, man. I mean, and I'm a former offensive lineman. I would still value an elite receiver or running back any day of the week. So, as much as I would like to see more running in there and go back to the days of, you know, when I was a kid growing up watching guys like Walter Payton and Roger Craig and those guys dominate the game and everything. You know, today's NFL, it's you got to take the Julio Joneses before you take the Zeke Elliotts every time.
Yeah, I look at Brandon Staley. What is he now? He's a Chargers head coach.
Correct.
He was the Rams DC
right.
last year. He had some really interesting quotes and insight into his philosophy, because he basically decided, and this is a shift from what most people are doing. He decided, like, look, if you want to run it on us, we'll handle that later. But you ain't going to throw it on us. It's just math. He said it in an article to our Robert Mays at The Athletic. He was like, look, it takes a lot of 4 and 5 yard runs to equal up to a 40-yard pass. And it's like, it sounds revolutionary when you talk to some football coaches, but yeah, it's freaking basic math. If you stop a team from exploding on you in the passing game, you are drastically increases the chances that you beat them.
Yeah.
It's just really just that simple. I know that in the trenches, those guys, like, they'll tell you all the time, like, we're wearing them down with the run game. We're demoralizing them, like, with our ground attack. I feel you. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. You know what's also demoralizing? 50-yard passes.
Yeah.
Like, they are. You know?
Yeah, stifle an offense for 15 plays and then have them go 60 on one play will take the wind out of your sails, because you think you've got them, and then they get you, and they get all of it back on one play. That definitely is demoralizing.
Yeah, so I think Brandon Staley, you're going to see a lot of teams, and he learned that from, I think, like, he adapted some stuff he learned from Fangio doing that. So I think you're going to see that shift, especially as we get into these pass-happy offenses. I mean, look at the Bucks. We're doing, like, they're running, like, cover 6, cover 7. The Rams are running a bunch of cover 6, cover 4 against these teams that, you know, are just pass happy. I think the way, because of the adjustment the offense has made, like, hey, let's throw it. The defenses need to stop their old mindset of let's stop the run first and make them one dimensional, blah, 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 that you hear every defensive coach say. No, no, no. Let's stop what they're doing well first. Like, yeah. If you're the Ravens, if you're playing the Ravens, cool. Stop their ground attack. Feel you. Play the Chiefs. I don't give a damn about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You need to stop Tyreek and Travis. Like, and that's what teams figured out with Seattle last year, and they tried the same thing with Buffalo. That's why ultimately being a balanced attack matters. But, like, your defense should be designed to stop what the other team does best and what's more likely to kill you. A more likely to kill you is a 40-yard pass. So you should design your defense not to give up explosive passes. Like, it's very simple. And so I think the way we see more defenses doing that is going to, honestly, that might be running backs valuable again. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But right now, that's what every defensive coordinator should be doing, unless you're playing against, like, the Ravens or the Browns, who have gone, like, back into the 50s with their offense.
Right. You know, it's actually the philosophy that won the Giants the Super Bowl back in Super Bowl 25 when they beat the Buffalo Bills. I remember watching America's Game on the NFL Network, and they came in. I forget. I think it was Belichick who was doing the commentary, or somebody says that Belichick comes into the defensive room and, you know, getting ready for the Super Bowl, and he says if we're going to win this game, Thurman Thomas is going to have to run for over 100 yards because we have to stop that K gun, shotgun, no huddle offense that the Buffalo Bills were killing everybody with. So they had to take away that passing game, and that meant them letting Thurman Thomas run for as many yards as he did, and frankly it almost worked against him, like you said. Thurman Thomas was, and he was a Hall of Famer, and they were running like the two pass rushers and dropping nine back into coverage to stifle that pass play or the pass game to take away the K gun and force the ball into Thurman Thomas's hands. If Scott Norton or Norwood hits that field goal and Buffalo Bills win, Thurman Thomas is probably the MVP of the game because he had like 120 yards rushing and a touchdown in that one. And, but it was a philosophy that won that the Giants, who were a big underdog going into that game because they shut down the passing game, where they sold out for the passing game and left, run the ball all you want. We're going to stop for the pass. That's where we're selling out.
Yeah, and I mean, and the Super Bowls are what we use as like the ultimate example. And I think I just used one as well. But I just think, like, even you just take the median offense, it's going to throw. I think only the Titans were like maybe under 50% on like neutral situations, neutral meaning like scratch 2 minutes and then scratch like third down, which most teams throw on.
Right.
Anyway, just like a neutral situation. Now the team's getting blown out or winning by a gazillion. The teams on average, I think I would guess without looking at it, that a team's throwing it about 50%, 57% of the time. Like you're more often than not going to get a pass. So like while you have that, in a time where the most stable thing about offense year to year, you just take any given year, what is more likely to carry over? It's quarterback play and your passing offense. Mm-hmm. If you have a really efficient passing offense and you keep the same personnel, that is the thing that's going to consistently continue year to year. We have like decades of data to bear that out. So right. While that's true, I mean, independent of who plays in the Super Bowl, like if you start a team from scratch, just a blind like expansion team, like, hey, let's try to build the most efficient passing offense we can. Let's start there. Doesn't mean we're not going to run it, but we should start there. And then if you're starting with your defense, like, all right, let's try to make sure our passing defense is really, really, really efficient like that. And you now, if you look at that and you look at the best teams in the league over, I'd say last like 20 or so years, like that bears out. Not to say these teams weren't good at running or run defense. But you look at you take the most efficient, not just counting stats like total yards or whatever, or total sacks or whatever, like really get into the efficiency numbers on either side of the ball. That all bears out. Even a team like the Titans now, Ryan Tannehill's been a top five quarterback the last 2 years, right? It's not just Derrick Henry. Their most important player is Tannehill. Even if their best player is Derrick, the most important player is the guy who's been like leading in like touchdown percentage like over the last two seasons.
Yeah.
That bears out. And so you have to build each side of the ball accordingly. So yeah, whether you're stopping the pass or building a passing offense, this is where you should start. I don't want anyone to hear that and think Mike don't care about the run game. I do, but I also care about, being efficient. That's the way to go in any sport. You should try to like get on base efficiently, score runs efficiently. Like you should try to score baskets in the NBA efficiently. You should try to score touchdowns efficiently. Like it's all, you don't want to have wasted energy and wasted motion. That's just stupid. That's how you get fired.
Right. Right. All right. So as we wrap things up here with you, Mike, I appreciate the time. Let's go through the schedule real quick. You got the AFC South and the NFC North. That's why we're talking, because you're playing our division this year. Speaking of the South, you got Indy and Tennessee right off the bat. Then Indy on the road, Tennessee at home. Then back-to-back road games at Minnesota, at San Francisco, and then a quick turnaround at the Rams on Thursday night. And then the last couple of games before the bye week, you stack those primetime games one on top of each other. You got Thursday night, then 10 days later, Sunday night football at Pittsburgh, and then home for the Saints on Monday night football. I don't think I've seen a schedule like that before where they stack up. You're going to see the Seattle Seahawks in prime time no matter what for pretty much most of the month of October.
I'm not a huge analyze schedule too far out guy, because things change so
sure
much.
Yeah,
I mean, this time last year, if you looked at Seattle's schedule, like, wow, that week 17 game against the Niners is gonna be a doozy,
right?
And then it featured like Nick Mullins, you know, and the game had no fans, and the game wasn't even in Santa Clara. It was in like Glendale.
Yeah, right? it was, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, life just, I mean, look how many things changed about that game. There was no Jimmy G in it, no George Kittle, no Nick Bosa. It was no longer even being played in California. And it meant nothing to either team. Seattle had already clinched the division, and the Niners could not make the playoffs. So, and that's just an extreme example of, like, games that just everything can just change. In this time last year, if you'd have looked at Seattle's Week 2 schedule and be like, ah, man, no Tom Brady. This Patriots game might stink. And then they get Cam Newton in, like, early July, and it's like, oh, damn. Now that game's tight, and it honestly was one of the better games of the year we scheduled last year. So you just never know. I'm looking at, just kind of looking. It'd be nice to see Trevor Lawrence, like he comes here. When they play Julio and A.J. Brown, I think that is in Week 2. That seems like it'll be a pretty fun matchup. Carson Wentz has never beaten the Seahawks, like ever. So playing him Week 1 should be kind of fun. The TBs on Seattle should have their jugs machines out that we could practice before that, because they'll give them some chances. Only thing I'm kind of on the schedule, I'm just looking like, man, it's so weird to predict a team going like 11-6 or something.
Yeah.
Or 12-5. It just doesn't feel right. Like,
not at all.
You know, I don't know how to, like, I was predicting like one team and I was like, yeah, they might go 4-13. And I was like, ew. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, that just seems like a lot more demoralizing than 4-12. And it's just one more loss. So, yeah, that's just really, really ugly. Like, I don't know what the expectations up there in Chicago, but like, I'd probably say like a 9-8 year.
Yeah.
And then like, but even then, 9-8, ew, that seems it feels weird to write or even think about.
Right. And that's a regular season record. That's not if we're trying to get creative and throwing the, you know, the playoff appearance in there and that's your record, 9-8 or anything like that. No, it's, that's what you got to do to finish out the regular season. So, The one that I was interested in is have the Seahawks beaten Green Bay in Lambeau yet?
I mean, ever, yeah.
Sure.
But not with Russ.
Right.
Russ is like, I forget what he is there, but it's not good.
Yeah.
He's got a loss there in 2017, a loss there in 2016, which is like 5 picks. And he's got a loss there in the playoffs. So yeah, that'll be a big one. I already got my hotel booked for Green Bay. Looking forward to not being in a snowstorm if I go there like I was last time for that playoff game. The Bears one, I'm kind of interested in. I'm interested in all the times that they're going to play the rookie QBs, man, because I've developed this, like, I'm on like the opposite end of the spectrum, I think, as a masses in that. I really am in favor of, you take a guy in the first round, you are foolish to sit him behind someone you don't think is the future.
Mm-hmm.
I really just don't think that's even like a good idea. It very rarely works when you think about it.
Yeah.
I tell people that, I've been arguing with people in Chicago about this and San Francisco. And they're like, what about Mahomes? I'm just like, guys, A, that's one time that it may have worked. B, I think we need to go back and look at that 2017 season. Knowing what we know about Mahomes, was it really the right idea to sit him that whole year? Like, they ended up losing in the playoffs to, like, Tennessee or something. Like,
yeah,
they
did.
Where Mariota threw a touchdown to himself
right.
on accident.
Yeah.
Like, that's the team they were losing to. I think that was at home, too. So they
yeah,
lost that.
And they were winning that game by, like, 17 points, and Tennessee came on, like, in the late third, early fourth quarter to take the lead and win that game.
Right. Does Mahomes, if you give him Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt, who I believe was the offensive rookie of the year, maybe? Maybe it was Kamara. But either way, Kareem Hunt was nasty that year. You have Travis, you have Tyreek, and like, does rookie Mahomes struggle? Probably not. By January of 2018, he's probably like real close to being MVP Mahomes at that point. I just think that game action actually would have been better for him. Like, how much did he really get better sitting behind Alex Smith for 16 weeks? So I don't even think that example holds up. Like, yeah, it looks fine now, like it worked out, but if I was Andy, like, hop back in a time machine, nah, man. I just start this Mahomes kid week one, because not only are you burning a year of when he's cheap, which I feel like people forget about that
part. Right.
You're just setting your whole clock back. Think of the Bears, right? Let's use Bears, exactly. You play Andy. All right, Justin Fields' cap hit is whatever this year. It's pennies, for the most part, for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
All right, boom. You start him next year, 2022. You know you're not winning the Super Bowl in 2022 with your rookie quarterback. You're just not. Like, even Mahomes couldn't get there. It just doesn't happen. So, all right. Now you got 2 years of Justin Fields on the cheap, and you ain't sniffed championships. Right? So then you're hoping that in his third year, that's like, all right, this is our first time having a chance to win a championship with our quarterback that we traded up to get. Or even if you didn't trade up, just that you use a first-round pick on. I think that's a bad use of resources. And when you look at a lot of these quarterbacks, the dudes they're playing behind, when they suck, you really don't want your guy learning from him that much.
Right.
You know, like, it's one thing to be behind Tom Brady or Russell Wilson or even an Aaron Rodgers, right? That's just kind of how, you know, there's things to be learned. I'm not sitting nobody behind Andy Dalton. I'm just not. I don't want you learning what he learned, right? Because learning what he learned got him fired from jobs, right? Like, he was the reason Cincinnati kept getting to the playoffs and then not getting anywhere.
Right.
Right. Like, I think, and then if you go talk to some of these quarterbacks, there's nothing that, I know they use the term mental reps or whatever. There is nothing that beats being on the field, getting first team reps from the jump. Like, you look at a guy right now, like, my man, Trevor. Trevor's going to be ahead of his other rookie peers. Maybe not better. I don't know that. But if you got to split the times and you're taking the second team reps like Mac Jones is doing and like Trey Lance is doing, nah, man, you need those first team reps with the first team O-line and the first team center and the starting receivers. That stuff matters. Those reps matter. In-game reps matter. Throw your guy into the fire and see what he's good at, see what he's bad at, collect that information, and find out, hey, he actually stinks. We drafted Jamarcus Russell. Let's move on. Or you're like, oh, we drafted Justin Herbert, and he's a stud. Let's roll with this.
Or,
like, that information collecting matters so much in these scenarios. Like, the Dolphins did it all wrong. They only got, like, 8 games or 2 or whatever. Now it's like, ooh, damn, now we got to make a tough call. Whereas if you'd have started him from the jump, you'd have a better chance of a better assessment of his strengths and weaknesses. You'd have a full 16 games like, this is our guy or this is not our guy. Like, it'd be very apparent at that point. So I think the collecting of that information, knowing whether you need to move on, knowing if you need to upgrade coordinators or tackles or get him another receiver or a tight end, it's much easier to do all that from the jump, whereas like holding it off waiting. That's a long way to say, like, play your rookie. I think every team who took one in the first round should play.
Well, you know what? It's the Nagy and company were pretty adamant about Dalton being the starter before they drafted Fields and even after. But that you kind of seeing them also kind of throwing out this bone that they're kind of softening on the idea, because a week or two ago they threw out the phrase that they're not going to sit Fields just to sit him. You know, he's not, if he turns out that he's the best quarterback on the team, then he's going to play sooner rather than later, which kind of leaves the window open because Andy Dalton hasn't exactly been lighting things up in OTAs thus far, and Justin Fields has been impressive, to say the least. And, you know, kind of opening it up that if he goes out there, if Andy Dalton goes out there and has a Mike Glennon-esque preseason, which was an utter disaster when he was his first throw as the Bears quarterback in the preseason was a pick six. He throws a pick six to the Broncos. They run it back the other way. Before the end of the half, they bring Trubisky out because that was his rookie year. He leads the team on a two-minute drill for a touchdown right before the half and then starts the second half, leads another touchdown drive again. And it was just like, so why do we have Mike Glennon on this team? Obviously, this kid Trubisky is the best quarterback on the team. He should be playing, and it took us until like week five to finally get him out there. I don't think the Bears are going to make that mistake. If Dalton comes out there and craps the bed in the preseason, I think we might see Justin Fields week one against the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to what I said earlier. If you're sitting him behind a guy who you know is not the future, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? That's my thing. That's really, the Niners fans are having a problem grasping this concept because they think they can win games with Jimmy G when their only year of ever winning things with Jimmy G is when they have the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, if that's what you need to win with the guy, which it is, then that's just wrong. Like, if the Bears know, hey, man, Andy's probably not going to be our starter in 2022. All right, so then just play the guy who is going to be then. Like, get him those reps while he doesn't cost you anything. Like, it's very simple. And if I'm Nagy, I'm just going all in on this guy because it's like, look, if it doesn't work, I'm getting fired.
Yeah.
So I got nothing to lose. You know, same thing with Pace. Like, if this doesn't work, we're out of here anyway. So let's just go down swinging. Andy Dalton is not going down swinging. Like, that's not. So if I was, that would be my advice to those guys. I don't care what the dudes look like in camp, really. Like, play, you need to see your investment out there. See what he looks like and just go for it. Who knows? Right? Who knows? Maybe he looks like a stud. And if he stinks, like I said, everyone's getting fired and then you take another quarterback the next year. That's just kind of how it works. You don't need to waste your time on.
Yeah, the NFL is a lot more cutthroat these days than it was when I was growing up, when a guy could be a backup for 6 years before he became the starter. You know, they didn't have to be that immediate investment or return on investment with the quarterbacks, especially. You know, like, I look at a guy like Steve Young, who was a backup at San Francisco for 6 years behind Montana before he finally, took over and then had a Hall of Fame career after that. Kind of thing.
The difference back then too was the salary cap.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So that was a huge thing too. Like, there's more incentive to get your guy out there earlier now,
mm-hmm.
Because he's on minimum wage effectively. Whereas, like, yeah, before you could draft a guy and then be like, we're gonna give him $100 million today. Like, it could go either way. So with the new CBA, there's really no reason for you to just be sitting your guy. If the guy in front of him is not the future, right?
Yeah.
There's just no point. So Godspeed to the Bears.
Yeah. I want to see him out there sooner rather than later. I'm just kind of terrified that we might, ruin him just because we have not had any luck whatsoever with quarterbacks. So that's the only thing that's kind of making most Bear fans antsy about the idea of throwing him out there right away. So I personally think he could handle it, and that we'd be in our best position to put him out there. But like I said, it makes me nervous because, you know, we threw Trubisky out there too early with, you know, other quarterbacks, and it just didn't work out for us. So I think that's why most Bear fans lean to the side of let him sit and learn before we have to throw him out to the Wolves. Because I don't think there isn't a Bear fan out there that doesn't think Fields is going to play in 2021. I don't think there is one that doesn't think he's going to play this year for one reason or another. It's just a matter of when is, I think, what makes Bear fans, you know, waver on the idea.
Well, you know what the other problem is that the teams do is they do probably what the Bears are going to do and then wait till their starter gets, like, hurt.
Yeah.
And then you are legitimately throwing him into the Wolves.
Right. Like
what happened with Justin Herbert, the Chargers got their ass saved that he ended up being good. He basically just threw him out there with no first team reps all week. I think Tyrod got his lung punctured or something like pregame.
Yeah.
So he had no prep, just threw him out there, and it just so happened to work against the defending champs. That's such a blessing. That does not go like that.
Yeah.
It is much better to give them the reps now instead of, like, even the Dolphins. I'm arguing with Dolphins fans about this. They're like, oh, you know, Tua got 2 weeks and a bye week to prep. You know, like, no. Do you guys know bye week works? All the players leave. Even last year, they didn't leave but because they couldn't, protocol.
Right.
They couldn't practice. You don't practice on the bye week. So Tua didn't get 2 weeks. He got 3 days, just like every other quarterback does in the week, to practice and play for against the best team, best defense in the league, the Rams, at the time. Like, that's doing your guy a disservice. Why don't you just give him a whole preseason? Give him a whole offseason as the number one guy to get right. He'll learn way more that way. And, like, I understand, like, before he's ready to be thrown to the Wolves, like, if he's going to be a starting quarterback, there's Wolves every damn week. Right? That's just kind of how it works. If you can't just wait till you play the 32nd ranked defense, throw him out there, and be like, oh, okay, cool, he's good. No, man. Throw him out there against the best defense. That's actually when you really learn about your guy, right? Because then it really is up from there. Because he's not going to play sucky defenses every week. I don't really believe – you can do that in college, I think. Start your guy against, you know, some HBCU in week one. Cool. Mm-hmm. Get your guy's confidence up. He's a true freshman or whatever. I feel that. These are grown-ass men. He needs to be ready against the Rams, the Vikings, the Chiefs, the Patriots, whoever. There's just – there's so much he'll be so much more equipped to succeed versus sitting there, you know, doing nothing, getting no reps all week in practice, maybe even doing scout team stuff. Like, that doesn't help. Throwing the football to your teammates is how you get better at quarterback. That's just really how it works. Playing against another defense where the guys aren't on the same payroll as you, that is how you get better. Like, the learning part does matter, but hey, I got a secret for everybody. You can learn and play at the same time. Seen it. They're not mutually exclusive ideas.
Right.
You know, Tua could have learned from Fitzpatrick and played. Because you know what he was doing while he was playing? Learning from Fitzpatrick. You know, he didn't just stop learning from him because he started playing.
Right. I get it, man. You're turning me. That's for sure.
That's my goal, man. I want Chicago and Niners fans on board with me on this. Play your rookie.
Yeah, I'm not against that. And the funny thing is, my fears is based on what's happened in the past, but I think there's just something different about Justin Fields. There's just a different vibe about this kid than any other. You know, I mean, the Bears haven't spent many first round picks on quarterbacks or just in young quarterbacks in general. But the ones that we have brought in, there's just a different, like, a swagger to this kid. Like, he's already been through the ringer as far as he's played in the SEC. He's played in the Big Ten. He's played in the, you know, the college football playoff. He beat Trevor Lawrence head-to-head this past year. He should have beaten him a year ago if his receiver doesn't drop the touchdown in the end zone in the semifinal 2 years ago. You know, he's been under the bright lights. He's been through it all. It's been put on his shoulders from high school. And he's managed to still be the best of the best and get to where he is now. So it's like, I think there's something different about Fields that he could handle it if we threw him to the Wolves week one against the Rams, who were last year's NFL's best defense.
Yeah. No, I mean, if it helps, I'm not a QB evaluator, but I talked to people before the draft who were like, Fields might be actually the best dude in the draft of all the QBs. That includes Lawrence. So you never know. It wouldn't be the first time that, like, the order of the talent didn't match the order in which they were drafted.
Right.
Like,
well, I mean,
we've seen a gazillion examples of how that just is not always true.
And one in particular, back in 2017, when we took Trubisky number 2, and Mahomes came off at 10, and Watson came off at 12. If we could do that one over again, it would not go that way this time. So, you know, yeah, and also
2018 draft is the same way.
Yeah,
2012
you're right.
Draft. I mean, maybe Colts fans still would want Luck, but I mean, a lot of people would probably just take Russ. And even then, even if you still want Luck first, you're definitely taking Russ next, and you're not taking RG3, Brandon Weeden, or Ryan Tannehill.
Right.
You know, like, it doesn't. It 2016 draft. Everyone would take Dak now, not Goff or Wentz. So
right.
There's examples almost every year. How where the order goes in the draft is not informative in terms of who's going to be the most talented. Doesn't work like that. So
yes, indeed.
Who knows? Maybe Fields ends up being the best guy.
Knock on wood, from your lips to God's ears, my friend. From your lips to God's ears. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate all the time. It's going to be a while before we get a chance to talk again, since the Bears and the Seahawks are playing the day after Christmas. So 6 months from now or more before we get a chance to talk. And I hope that we can get it arranged to have you back on to preview that game and see, you know, number one, who's the quarterback, who's it playing, does this game mean anything for either team? Most likely something for the Seahawks, maybe nothing for the Bears. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see, but I look forward to getting a chance to talk to you and having you back on the show again.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And where can we find you online, find your work?
Just follow me on Twitter, at Mike Dugar. All my stories, or you can find them on my author page, but my author page for The Athletic is just in my bio on Twitter. So, and then I always pin my podcast to the top of my profile too. So my Twitter is kind of that, like, just one-stop shop to get all my stuff.
And is it Athletic Podcast, or do you do an independent one?
No, it's a Seahawks Man to Man podcast. We're on The Athletic, but we're also on Spotify. We're on Apple. Like, if you get podcasts, if you regularly listen to podcasts, you'll be able to find ours. Seahawks Man to Man.
All right, Mike. Thanks so much for your time. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, man. See you.
And once again, want to thank Mike Dugar from the Seattle Athletic for coming on the show and sharing his knowledge. Looking forward to having him back on, seeing if we can figure it out, because it's the day after Christmas that the Bears and the Seahawks play all the way up in the Pacific Northwest there in Seattle. And, you know, the fandom and, you know, the 12th man up there in Seattle, one of the more ominous places to play a road game in the NFL, and how that will be humming that time of year when the season is pretty much going to be decided. And how important of a game will this be for either squad, or will it be important for both, or anything like that? Very interested to see where we're at that point in the year, and looking forward very much to having Mike back on the show. So, and that's going to do it for the NFC West, guys. We are moving right along. Now we move on to the AFC North. First up will be Lindsey Patterson from the Cincinnati Inquirer to help us preview the Bengals. Then it's all locked on from there. We got Jeff Lloyd from Locked On Browns, Kevin Ostreicher from Locked On Ravens, and Christopher Carter from Locked On Steelers before we move on to our SB Nation guys, Jeremy Reisman, Evan Western, Chris Gates, for the NFC North, and then wrapping up with Lauren Cox from Locked On Bears to preview our beloved Chicago Bears and wrap up the 2021 opponent preview series. So it'll be 15 episodes by the time we're all done. This one is number 7, 8 more to go. So we're basically at the halfway point here, chugging right along and getting where we need to go. So be sure to check us out on Monday when Lindsey and I will help preview the Bengals and how they're going to bounce back. You know, will Joe Burrow be 100% and ready to go at the beginning of the season after the ACL tear? And what other, you know, was it a good idea to go with Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell, you know, the offensive tackle that could have, you know, took care of his, you know, covered his backside and things like that, or reunite him with his favorite weapon from college? So as a former offensive lineman, I would have gone with Penei Sewell, because it's pretty hard to hit a guy whether or not he's wide open when you're throwing from underneath a pile of defenders. But that's just me. So we'll see what Lindsey has to say about that to kick off the AFC North and moving right along in the opponent preview series. So come back on Monday from me and Lindsey Patterson previewing the Bengals. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.